Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, MMA Junkie senior reporter and longtime MMA journalist Mike Bon. And here we are, folks. It is UFC 311 Fight Week, the first numbered event of 2025, and it is shaping up to be a fantastic week, fantastic night of fights. Who is more excited for this than this guy right here? Amazing doubleheader, of course, in the main event on Saturday at Intuit Dome. As of now, we are hoping the card goes there. Of course, devastated for everyone in California who has dealt with the fallout of the wildfires there. Just completely devastating scene for everyone out there in Los Angeles and the California area. Unreal stuff. And definitely seemed like for a moment there, this card could be in jeopardy as far as the location happening there. But as of now, as of this recording, as all systems go, I will be flying out to Los Angeles on Tuesday to cover this card for MMA Junkie, and I'm quite excited. But of course, we will be ready to move on the fly if something comes up, a relocation. That video that Dana White did with Aiden Ross came out saying that they do have a contingency plan in place for Las Vegas. No event scheduled at T-Mobile Arena as of now on Saturday. So if they do need to move, it seems there is a plan in place. But right now, we're hoping this fight card does happen in Inglewood at the recently opened Intuit Dome, which is supposed to be nothing short of a spectacular venue. And it will play host to this double title fight event, of course, in the headliner, Islam Makhachev and Armin Sarukyan. This is as good as it gets. I've talked about on the show already, my most anticipated fight of 2025 that's scheduled so far. It doesn't get any better than this. Islam Makhachev, 14 consecutive wins. Armin Sarukyan looking to come for that belt. I spoke with Sarukyan a couple days ago for MMA Junkie. That interview is up on that YouTube channel over there. Also spoke with co-headliner Umar Nurmagomedov, who is extremely confident going into this fight against Merab Dvalishvili for the bantamweight title, saying that there is no chance Merab is going to beat him, sees no path to victory for the champion, and said he intends on making this look easy and making it look perfect. That is a hell of a claim and a hell of a task to try to overcome. We will see if Umar can do that on Saturday. A lot of other great fights we could talk about at UFC 311, but before we get into that, this is the final bit of preview content for 2025. In my estimation, we are going to have the first annual, the inaugural Bonfire 2025 championship draft, and joining me to do that will be Dean Thomas, MMA coach, UFC analyst. This man is everywhere. He is joining the broadcast booth on fight cards. He is doing his great work down there in South Florida, coaching some spectacular fighters, some up-and-coming names, and Dean Thomas is the man, and he is going to join the show for the first championship draft, where he and I will make our choices of who we think is going to make it the longest in 2025 with that belt. Will they make it the full year? Will they make it just partway through the year? We are going to make our draft selections on who we think is going to last the longest, and then, of course, that'll leave at the bottom the fighters we think will be dethroned the quickest. Will one of those come at UFC 311? Well, you will just have to wait and see. So here we go. It is the first ever, the inaugural championship draft here on the Bonfire. We will take a quick break and be right back with Dean Thomas. And we are back on the Bonfire with a first-time guest of the show. It is Mr. Dean Thomas, host of the SiriusXM show, co-host of Dana White's Looking for a Fight, co-host of the Fight Court podcast with Ryan Quinn, UFC analyst, ESPN analyst. Dean, how are you? Am I forgetting anything?
You're forgetting a lot. You're forgetting that you should have had me on this show a long time ago. I'll be feeling like you don't like me in the streets, man. I'm always down to come on and chop it up with you, man. First off, congratulations on the show. But man, congratulations, and I'm so glad to be here. I'm glad you have me on the show today.
Thank you for coming, Dean. No, I appreciate it. I was just waiting. We need to build up like an audience, right? We need to give you your proper respect and have at least make sure as many people are watching as possible. So I was just biding my time.
I don't care about that, man. All I care about is chopping it up with good people. But man, what are we doing today?
All right. So yeah, we are here having you for the first annual UFC championship draft here on the Bonfire. I obviously set it up a little bit during the intro, but yeah, we're going to pick who we think are going to be the longest standing champions through 2025. And I thought this was kind of a fun way to do things. We will each draft our six champions, starting with who we think is the most likely to the least likely to hold the belt through 25. So Dean, going to be interesting. Obviously UFC 311 fight week. We got two title fights with Islam Makhachev and Merab Dvalishvili. So I'm curious to see how you fit those in your order. But yeah, let's kick things off here. I will give you the floor, Dean. Who is your number one pick in the UFC championship draft for 2025?
And I'm going bold here, and I'm only saying this is bold because it could change this weekend. Mm-hmm. But my number one pick, who I think is going to be a standing champion in 2025, is Islam Makhachev.
Okay.
I feel as though his biggest threat will come to him this weekend, and if he can get through that, which I expect him to be able to get through this weekend, then he is going to be the longest standing champion of 2025.
Yeah, he's an interesting one, obviously, leading off the year. I think maybe the risky element of that is, does he get in three fights this year, right? I think that's what kind of the schedule is setting him up for. Like, if he fights in January, waits through Ramadan, maybe he gets one in summer. And then we know UFC always likes to have him in Abu Dhabi at the end of the year in October. So it's possible. And obviously,
never going to happen. There is no way this guy fights three times. When is the last time we seen a champion fight three times? I mean, it's rare. I mean, who did it? Obviously,
Alex
Pereira. But Alex is—he's a unicorn in MMA, and I don't know, man. I can't imagine him getting three in, which kind of makes this debate a little easier because it seems like all these guys have to do is fight once, mm-hmm. and they'll be champion for the rest of the year because they don't really like to fight that much. But I think Islam, to me, has the best shot at being the champion at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it is rare to have three title defenses in a year. It's only happened 7 times in UFC history, and the most 2 recent were Pereira in 24. Usman did it in, I think, 2021, and then the last time before that, I think, was like 2011. So it's definitely rare how often that happens. But yeah, the schedule could happen. Let's just talk a little bit about Islam versus Armin, since we're bringing it up here right off the bat. Like you said, you think this is probably going to be one of his tougher challenges. What do you just make of this rematch? Their first fight was a great one 5 years ago, but a lot has changed since then.
I mean, if we learned anything over the weekend, we learned that 5 years is a long time for a person to get better prepared. Yeah. We saw Mackenzie Dern take out Amanda Ribas, dominate Amanda Ribas after she got dominated 5 years ago. So that's a good indication that this can be a completely different fight. However, I'm not sure it's going to be that completely different of a fight. I just feel as though Armin Tsarukyan, he's a tremendous talent. He's young, he's strong, and he can wrestle with Islam. Islam has never really, we've never really seen him fight a guy who is a true lightweight that can wrestle with him. I mean, he's beaten the other guys that were, strikers that were trying to counter wrestle his attacks. But Armin could full out grapple and scramble with him. So it is a unique challenge. But I just think that the fight IQ of Islam is going to be a little too much. I think as champion, you know what's at stake. You've been in these spots before, and Armin can be kind of a hothead sometimes, and I think that he might get a little emotional at moments in the fight and not be able to contain his cool and fight the best fight to his ability.
Yeah, it's going to be super compelling. I mean, this is as high level as it gets, I think, in the sport. And the thing I do like about this pick too, Dean, I think you give yourself a little insurance, because let's say the hypothetical, if Islam wins here and then maybe he's looking at his second title fight in the second half of the year, maybe it's at welterweight, right? Like, maybe we'll see what happens with Bilal and Shavkat. And let's say Islam moves up and fights for that welterweight title. I assume he wouldn't vacate, so he'd still be the lightweight champion. So I feel like you have some maybe insurance on this bet as well, where he could maybe only have to defend that belt once this year, and then maybe he's fighting in a different division for a different belt.
Well, I hope not. I don't like these guys moving around to these different divisions. I mean, it's such a stupid thing, and it's such a buzzkill to the rest of the division when these champions are like, no, I'm going to put everybody on hold and move up and fight at a different weight class. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, the next challenge, I'm not sure who the next guy would be
at Oliveira,
probably, lightweight. So, but I mean, it's hopefully he sticks around and it at least gives another guy an opportunity to fight for the belt.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I love champions staying where they're at, but maybe Islam, if he wins this, right, he'll break the lightweight title defense record, be the first to get 4. So those are kind of the circumstances where maybe you can start asking for a different division. But yeah, I agree with you overall. I like the champions defending their titles.
Well, who do you got is sticking around?
You mean like at lightweight?
Well, you said, you know, your first pick. Who was your who? You didn't get into. No, are you gonna leave me on ice on this, Mike?
No, yeah, I wasn't.
This is the wildfire. You gonna leave me on ice?
I just wanted to keep our talk on Islam for a few minutes here, but yes, let's move on to my first pick, and I'm going with a little bit of a bold one too, and it has a few layers to it. But I am going to say the heavyweight champion at the end of the year is going to be Tom Aspinall. And I do think there's obviously a few ways this could happen, right? He could either not fight John Jones, John retires, and he's just upgraded to the undisputed champion. He could fight John and win, of course, and become the undisputed champion. Or I think could see a scenario where he fights John, loses, John retires, and then Aspinall at the end of the year is fighting for the vacant belt against whoever makes sense. So I think there's multiple paths where Tom could hold this belt, even if he wins a fight, even if he loses a fight. I just feel like John Jones, and I'm curious to see where either of us pick him in our draft here, is unlikely to hold that belt at the end of the year, whether it's circumstantial or his own choice.
You know what's crazy about this is that I don't think that John's going to be much of a factor. I don't think John really fights. I don't think it happens. I really don't think it happens. You know, I know he threw out the number 30 million. I think the UFC would call his bluff on that. I think the UFC would be like, all right, we'll give you 30 million. What you want to do? And John will probably be like, well, we got to do it at a different date. Then he'll get hurt. I just don't see it happen. I think there's just too many circumstances and obstacles that can get in the way of a John Jones Tom Aspinall fight. And I feel it, and not that I think John is like ducking him, I just think John likes to play hardball really, really hard. And I don't see it happening this year. I just feel as though John is going to make it so difficult that it won't happen. But I like the pick. I like the pick of Tom Aspinall being the champion at the end of it's at some capacity, whether it is the undisputed or the interim champion. I like the pick.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Obviously, this rumor, like you said, the 30 million that's come out, and Joe Rogan kind of put some extra focus on it and then had to walk it back, which you don't hear Joe going on record saying, you know, I got this wrong. This is my mistake. I shouldn't have put that out there.
Anybody got that phone call.
Yeah, it sounds like he did from Dana White. So
everybody got a boss, man. It's crazy. You know, no matter who you think you are, how big you think you are, Joe Rogan is at one moment he's the biggest man on the planet, but he'll get that phone call. Hey, man, take this back. You know what I'm saying? Everybody got a boss. Everybody got to answer to somebody.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. And I mean, I don't know. I feel like we might get the fight. I know you shared your feelings there, but to me, like one of the signs, and you know this well, when fighters go quiet a bit, as Tom Aspinall has been over the past month or so, you feel like something is heading in the positive direction. Because how many months did Tom spend saying, this guy's ducking me, making YouTube videos, you know, doing all that stuff. And we haven't heard any of that from him in quite a while, which makes you think maybe something is heading in a good direction.
Well, that's a good sign. And if I'm not trying to be the cynic of the greatest cynic of MMA, but I just know reality and sometimes things don't work out, and I'm hoping for it. So when I say it's not going to happen, trust me, it's not because I don't want it to happen. I want it to happen. I want to see John Jones and Tom Aspinall. I just don't see why John would want to, like he would want this. He would do it. I'm not saying he wouldn't do it, but I just don't see why he would want to do it unless he gets a lot of demands met. And if that 30 million is a real demand, I can see, and they give him that, I can see him going, damn, they gave me 30 million. Let me see what other demands I can make.
Right.
And I can see him kind of adding on a few things to just make it more difficult. And the next thing you know, another year went by and we didn't get John Jones, Tom Aspinall.
Yeah, there is such a thing of pricing yourself or negotiating yourself out of a fight. Dana White has said that many times before, other than just asking for money. So it's going to be interesting to see. Hopefully we get answers about that in the next, you know, weeks or months here. But let's move on, Dean. Who is your number two draft choice?
This is a bold one, too, because I know that there's been rumors of him moving around and moving up in weight. Like we talked about what I said I don't like.
Yep.
But Ilia Topuria would be my number two draft pick. I just think that the gap between him and everybody else in the division is so large that I can't imagine him not being able to be champion by the end of the year. I think he's got just this such dominant skill set. It's not the most flashy, but it's so dominant and so effective that I can't imagine many guys in that division being able to beat him. I know he talked about moving up. But he'd be crazy to move, to give up the belt, give up pay-per-view points, and move up. Mm-hmm. That's a crazy idea. I can't imagine that.
Yeah, it's we haven't seen that done too many times. I think the most maybe infamous instance is Henry Cejudo giving up his flyweight and bantamweight belts to retire. And I don't think that decision in hindsight worked out too well for him, because I know he wanted some more money and things like that. And he ended up coming back a few years later. And I know he got to fight for the title, but I don't think he was in that position. Like you said, pay-per-view points, more money. Those are huge perks that every fighter works their way to for years. And once you get them, it's hard to give them up, right? Is he kind of laid up?
He there's no way he's going to be willing to give that up. I mean, he's defended it once. Fight a few more times. But I don't think anybody can beat him right now at featherweight. So if he sticks around at featherweight, he will be champion at 2025.
Yeah, it's a good one for sure. I mean, you look at the path this year. I've heard rumors the Alexander Volkanovski rematch likely to be next. That could be maybe in May or June, early summer. I think we're going to get that. And then if they can get the Spain event at the back end of the year, of course, they would love to have him as the defending champion. And maybe you get a Diego Lopez fight where they both speak the language in that area, or Movsar Evloev would be, I guess, the other top contender out there. And yeah, I think he's got a great chance of beating all three of those fighters. So I do think that's a good choice. Who do you think is the biggest threat to Ilya out of those three I just mentioned, whether it's Movsar, Diego, or Volkanovski?
Probably Movsar. Hmm. Probably. I think he's skill-wise, I think he's the biggest threat. And which sucks for me, because I think the biggest threat to him in the division is Aljamain Sterling. Hmm. And Aljamain got, I don't want to say robbed, but I thought he won the fight. And that kind of robbed him of an opportunity to get a shot at Ilya. Aljamain would have been the biggest threat based on his skill set, his elusiveness, and so on and so forth. But so he's out of the picture right now. So when you talk about the next two, Movsar and Diego Lopez, I think Movsar is probably a bigger threat.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting stylistic matchup. And if UFC could do an undefeated versus undefeated title fight, you don't get those too often. So I think that would be phenomenal. But I understand there's some more promotable names in that division in Diego Lopez and Volkanovski. Okay, we'll move on. My second choice, Dean, I'm going to go to the lowest men's weight class. I'm going to pick Alexandre Pantoja to hold that belt. I think it kind of speaks for himself. One of the most dominant champions in the UFC. He's already beaten pretty much anyone who I could envision being a title challenger this year, whether it's Kai Kara France or Brandon Moreno or Brandon Royval. He's already beat these guys. So unless we get something unforeseen, whether it's maybe Davison Figueiredo returning to flyweight or Henry Cejudo returning to flyweight, I don't think that's the plan for either guy right now. So yeah, I feel pretty confident Pantoja has a couple more rematches this year, beats the guys he's already beat again, and ends the year with that title.
I like that pick. He was on my radar. I just feel as though a guy like Manel Kopp, I think, has a skill set to beat him. And so when Manel Kopp had his last fight, and he left the octagon, I went up and said some words to him. The camera captured that, and everybody saw it. And everybody's like, What'd you say to him? And I never told anybody what I said to him. I said, don't worry about what I said to my man. That's my brother. You know, I ain't want to tell nobody. Yeah. But I'm going to tell you on this show. Okay. I told him to keep his focus. Because to be a champion, a lot of things have to come together at the same time. You have to have the skill set. You got to get the fight, you know, the opportunities. And in order for all that to come together, you got to have this certain level of focus. And Manel Kopp doesn't seem to have that. I mean, you could tell just by the way he fights. Like, he loses his focus in fights, much less being focused months in advance to be able to get a title shot and prepare for it properly and win it. So I wanted to suggest to my man, keep your focus, man. Like, you have the skill set to be a champion, but you got to be more focused and disciplined. But I think he has the skill set to beat Pantoja. I just can't imagine him being able to string together, having the focus to string together a good run for months in advance to get the fight and then fight him with the same focus and win. So I like the Pantoja thing, but you know, if Manel Kopp could get focused, man, Manel Kopp might beat him.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see that. Of course, Kopp headlining, I think, March 1st against Brandon Royval. And I would imagine that's a title eliminator. So whoever gets that, I think, gets the shot. whether that's the next one or Pantoja fights someone else first, I do think we see the winner of that this year. So yeah, there's a couple interesting fights out there. I'm just, Pantoja's looking so damn good that he's hard for me to pick against. I think he's maybe a safe bet. He was very busy last year too, so maybe we only get one fight out of him this year. So I just feel like things are maybe aligning for him to keep that belt, but we'll see how it shakes out up flyweight. Okay, Dean, back to you. Who is your number three pick?
Now, I'm not allowed to pick anybody that you already picked, am I?
Correct.
Okay. So, and I'm glad you said Tom early because I had Tom, but I'm going Alex Pereira.
Okay.
I think Alex Pereira, every fighting is as much divisional as anything else. And sir, and this is, I spoke with Chris Curtis about this last week. He said he's still trying to learn how to fight as a middleweight using his body type, his skill set. He's still trying to figure this out. And he hasn't figured it out yet, clearly, because, I mean, like, just the boxing approach is probably not the best idea for him. However, light heavyweights have not figured out how to fight Alex Pereira. They haven't figured it out. And I feel as though everybody else is the same. Like, they're all the same kickboxing-style fighters that stand in front of you and can't figure this out. And all the guys are the same, and I can't imagine any of those guys doing something different to be able to get Alex off his game and beat him. So I think Alex is going to, however many fights he takes, unless he goes up to heavyweight and fights Tom or John, I don't see any of the light heavyweights being able to figure him out and beat him.
That's a good choice for sure. And again, another one that could have some layers to it. If he does go to heavyweight, I assume he would keep that light heavyweight belt for the time being, unless he made that full commitment. So one of those guys, similar to what I said earlier, where you could have someone who loses or moves to a division, but still has the title in their weight class, like I mentioned with Islam. So that's a very good choice. And like you said about the stylistic element of it, that whole thing is very interesting. I mean, Magomed Ankalaev, if that ends up being the next one, he's saying he's not going to take him down and strike with him, which seems like a counterproductive game plan.
That's my point. That's my try. But even Magomed Ankalaev is still going to stand in front of him for too long before he shoots. Like, they all just stand in front of him and try to fight him this way. Yeah. Khalil Roundtree did the best, and Khalil Roundtree used more movement, and he showed that there can be some difference. You can show a different style, and he did the best against them. But I don't see these other guys don't have the movement to fight him, and they're going to stand in front of him and get knocked out.
If Jamal Hill wins at UFC 311, do you see them trying to do that rematch? Like, I assume Ankalaev should and will be first. That could maybe happen as soon as March, maybe, from what I'm hearing, but nothing announced yet. Do you think if Jamal Hill does that, he will probably get that rematch? I know Prohajka, he's lost twice. So even if he has work to do.
I hope so. I think Jamal Hill would have deserved it. And I think that he's a good choice for it. Like, in terms of building fights, and everybody loves to hate Jamal Hill, and I love his fighting spirit, and I love his confidence in himself. I just don't know if he can do it. Like, when you look at the last fight, like, the pressure that Alex was able to put on him, just the presence pressure, I call it presence pressure, just standing in front of him, and Jamal Hill just looked a little like, whoa, I've never felt this before. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how he changes that and can do something different. Maybe we'll see how he looks against Jiří Procházka. It might change my mind, but based on the first fight, there's nothing about that first fight that suggests that Jamal Hill has the ability and the skill set to beat Alex.
Yeah, it's a tough one. You just wonder how healthy he was after the injury to the Achilles and everything coming into that fight. I was there at that basketball game.
I was there too. Was you hooping?
Yeah, I wasn't. I was watching from the sidelines. I didn't get the invite to play soon enough, but I was desperate to get out there because basketball is like my favorite sport to play. But yeah, when I saw Jamal go down, we thought maybe it was just like something small. He rolled an ankle, and then we quickly found out that he tore
something. Terrible. Tells me that you can hoop.
I try. I mean, as you can see here in my background, I got the Michael Jordan signed photo behind me. So yeah, that's my number one.
I mean, something tells me you got like good fundamentals. Like, you ain't flashy. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You ain't white chocolate out there, but I mean, something tells me that you got a nice little shot, good fundamentals. You can pass real good.
Well, we knew you were a good judge of character, Dean. So you can just read talent off the surface. This is what you're so good at.
I got this. Yep.
Okay. This is back to me now. And for my third pick in the championship draft, I'm going to go to the women's side for the first time on the show. And I'm going to pick Valentina Shevchenko, the UFC women's flyweight champion. Of course, she just regained the title from Alexa Grasso, who many think was her most difficult matchup in this weight class, the only one to beat her. I do think her next fight will probably be the toughest if you look at the next crop of contenders and Manon Fiorot. I think that's a tricky matchup for her, but if she gets through that, I like her chances of beating whoever might be next, whether it's Erin Blanchfield or Macy Barber, someone like that, Natalia Silva. I think she's kind of got the edge. So this first one that I assume will be next against Manon does worry me a little bit, but if she wins that one, which I think she's very capable of, I think she makes it through the rest of the year with that title.
You know, I think she beats Manon. I don't think Manon is – I've always been a little hard on Manon for whatever reason. I'm not sure why. Mm-hmm. I always felt like she's gotten through fights because she was able to do enough before time ran out, which is acceptable, right? That's an acceptable way of winning. I'm not saying that's not an acceptable way of winning. I just feel as though – when somebody recognizes that and they go, you know what, we're going to put more pressure on her and we're not going to allow her to skate around and then have these big moments and then skate around some more. We're going to make her fight the whole time. I think that she's she gets beat. I think Manon, somebody's going to beat her when they're able to just make her fight the whole time as opposed to her allowing her to skate until she can fight in her moments. But I think the biggest challenge to Valentina for me is Natalia Silva. Mm-hmm. I think Natalia Silva she's getting better. I think she's just hard to deal with on her feet because the way she uses her kicks and the range, and she just seems like she's tracking. I would have said Karini Silva, but somehow she had that horrid performance in Madison Square Garden. I think the lights got to her because to me, she's probably the most well-rounded skill-wise in the division, but she had that horrid performance. Hopefully she bounces back from that because I still think that she could be champion. But I like Natalia Silva to be able to beat Valentina sometime this year if Valentina gets past Manon Fiore.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. I assume Natalia might have to do one more fight before that shot. I don't know if they want to do her and Barber or her and Blanchfield, but yeah, there's some good fights to make at flyweight. I think it's as interesting as being in a few times or a few years, and that trilogy we got between Shevchenko and Grasso kind of allowed the division to flourish a little bit in the wake of that. Okay, Dean, so we're halfway through now. We got six champions left. Who is your number four pick for your team?
Going Bilal Muhammad.
Okay.
Bilal, I know that he's probably like, to me, he's, you know, when we start looking at the other champions, I'm starting to look at these other champions like, man, I don't even know if they're going to make it out the next fight. Yeah. But Bilal Muhammad, to me, actually I would have put him higher maybe, you know, if I had the opportunity to, because the way we saw Shavkat and Ian Garry fight, I don't think either of those beat Bilal. And I don't think, just stylistically, the way Bilal is looking right now and where he is and the amount of focus that he has and what he's doing for training, he's peaking right now. The window of opportunity is open for him right now. And I think this next year is going to be huge for him. But once it's over. Trust me. When I say it's over, when it's over for Bilal, it's over. But for right now, I just don't see any other welterweight being able to beat him based on what he's been doing and how he's been looking in his last couple of fights. So I'm going Bilal Muhammad.
I like that choice. In my like kind of mock draft where I just listed out 1-12, I had him at number 7, regardless of who would take that. So that's basically exactly where he got picked here at the 7th person. So yeah, I think that's a on point choice for this point where we're at. And yeah, I could see a scenario given the scheduling. If he doesn't fight till May or June, maybe he's one of those guys you alluded to off the top who only fights once this year. So I could see that kind of shaking out. Maybe he gets 2 in, but I think a lot of people agree the Shavkat fight looks a lot more winnable for him after we saw Shavkat and Garry. And then after that, I think he can beat pretty much any of these guys coming up right now. So a lot of legit welterweights. This division is growing to be insane. I think we just learned that Leon Edwards and Jack Della Maddalena will be headlining UFC London. So there's going to be some fights coming up. But if we do get Bilal and Chavkat, I like his chances of winning that. And then if he gets one more in this year against whomever that may be, I like his chances there as well. So, yeah, I think that is a nice pick for welterweight. Bilal Muhammad, you did not forget the name on there. You remembered it for your list.
No, I wish I could have had him a little higher. Like I would have had him a little higher.
It's hard to pick him over Islam, Tabora, yeah, and Alex Pereira. Sure. You got a pretty strong team.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, my next one. I'm going to pick one of the few remaining men's champions. We're getting down to the nitty gritty here, Dean. I'm going to go with UFC middleweight champion Dricus du Plessis. I think this is definitely getting more dicey here. As we said, as we get to the back end, some of these people inherently, the way we're doing this list, we feel they might not hold on to the belts as long. But I do like Dricus's chances of beating Sean Strickland in their rematch. I think he learned a lot from their first fight. And then the one that, of course, worries me is if he does end up fighting Khamzat Chimaev later in the year. I think a lot of people are kind of just thinking it's a coronation waiting for him to become middleweight champion. But I can't sit here and say Dricus du Plessis can lose any fight at this point. He's proved me wrong too many times. So, like, you'd think he'd lose to Khamzat if they fought, but who the heck knows? He's pulled a lot of surprising results. So I do think Dricus has a hard road ahead this year, but I don't think it's impossible. I think he can beat both these guys.
Yeah, when you talk about pressure performers, not many better than Dricus. Like, he really performs better under pressure. And that's what cracks people more than anything else, like pressure, the lights, the circumstances, and being able to carry so much weight. And Dricus has shown that he can carry that weight. He's a professional. Like, he's shown that he can carry that weight. Like, he's got a whole continent on his back. Like, he literally took Africa. I don't even want to just say South Africa. He took Africa because he was like, yo, I got this now. Y'all ain't here no more. I got this now. He took Africa, put it on his back, and has still showed up and performed, and he beat the hell out of Izzy. He made Izzy look bad. So, I don't want to underestimate Dricus either. It's easy to underestimate him. Like, looking at him, you go, man, this guy, he looks weird. It's easy to underestimate him. But in terms of performing under pressure, there's not many guys who do it as well as him.
How do you think that rematch with Sean Strickland goes? I heard Chris Curtis, when I interviewed him the other day, who's of course a teammate of Sean, said it's going to be like two coked out chimpanzees fighting in a phone booth. That's what he described this fight as.
it's Sean Strickland, for as good as everybody says he is in the gym, I almost feel as though he underperforms and is not the pressure performer as Dricus is. And I think that as a fighter, you have to constantly be evolving. You can't, the worst thing you can be as a fighter is the same fighter you were last year. And Strickland has done that, and he's gotten away with that because he is talented. But I feel as though in order for him to beat Dricus, he's going to have to do something a little different. As we saw when he fought Izzy, he did something a little different. He attacked Izzy, which we didn't expect. Like, he kind of just marches guys and jabs and front kicks, but he really attacked Izzy. And then when he caught him with that right hand in the first round, it gave him the confidence to fully put an assault on Izzy. So I feel as though for him to beat Dricus, he's got to do something a little different. He's got to be a little bit more aggressive, and he's got to use his skill set. We know he's got a great skill set, and I think skill for skill, he might be better than Dricus, but he's got to go out there and want to show that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both these guys are kind of very unorthodox, and the first time you fight them, I'm sure it's a bit of a shock. So I'm curious to see how they adjust to each other after spending that 25 minutes previously. So yeah, that's UFC 312 in Sydney on February 8th. So coming up pretty quick here. All right, Dean, back to you. There's four champions left. Who is your fifth choice in your draft?
All right, so this one is by default. I think I can say this one. I don't think you picked this one yet, but I'm going John Jones.
No, we have not picked him yet. He is on the board.
What does that say about the other champions? Well, especially when you hear my reasoning. John Jones will still be champion at 2025. Here's why. Because he will not fight. And they will allow him to hold on to the belt. Yeah, I think he's gained enough equity in the company now and has put Dana in a position where Dana loves him so much. I'm not sure how he did it. I don't know what he did to Dana for Dana to give him this much favor, but they've allowed this man to have so much freedom and just this autonomy to do what he wants. So I think John Jones will not fight in 2025 and still be champion at the end of it. They're going to allow him to hold on to the belt, and he's still going to be champion.
Oh my God, that's so depressing. We saw all these graphics the UFC posted of like champions at the beginning of 2024, at the end of 2024, and you see Tom Aspinall still with that interim tag. If we get another full year of that, that's going to be sad stuff for the heavyweight division. But I do think your reasoning is sound. I've said that kind of from the beginning, like even if John retires or whatever, he's going to drag this thing out as long as possible. I mean, you even see, like, I think he knew his days at light heavyweight were done. And then one day he just like announced, I'm vacating the title. But that was after months and months of him, I think, knowing he was done and still not making that announcement. So I could see something very similar happening there. And yeah, I like the way this shaked out. Dean, I have Tom Aspinall on my team. You have John Jones on your team. This can only break one way. So when we regroup and maybe do this again next year, we'll kind of look back on this and we'll know which way this
we were both wrong.
Or we might be both right. They both might still be holding titles at the end of there, but there can only be one undisputed. So we will see what happens. That is an interesting scenario. And yeah, we kind of talked about whether we think this is going to happen earlier. So yeah, we had to see John Jones fall somewhere in there. And I figured it would be on the back end, just given the circumstances here. Okay, this is back to me, Dean. And for my fifth team pick, I'm going to go with the strawweight champion, Zhang Weili. Another one, I think this one's dicey. She, of course, defends her title against Tatiana Suarez at UFC 312, but she's one of those people where she wins that fight, we might not see her again for the rest of the year. She only fights seemingly like once a year, maybe twice. So that's a real tough fight with Tatiana. I know tons of people are picking her to win that title. Felt like this is coming for a long time. Hopefully the fight happens and there's no issues with either of these women coming up there. But I do think if Weili wins, she will cruise through the rest of the year.
I don't think she's going to win this. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, she had to go somewhere on there. So she's my second to last pick. I'm not the most confident, but yeah.
I just don't think she's going to win this. I don't know why. I just kind of have this feeling that Tatiana is just going to somehow pull this off and then get injured. and then the belt's going to be up for grabs again. But I just feel as though Tatiana has a skill set that Weili Zhang doesn't always perform to the way we expect her to. Mm-hmm. You know, when she fights, like sometimes she's like, oh my God. But then and you see her hitting pads and you see her picking Francis Ngannou up over her head. You see her doing all these amazing things. And then she goes out and fights and it's just, that's not the same person. Yeah. I just don't think she's that high level of a performer. I think she's a great fighter and I think she's super talented, but in terms of her performing to her highest level of ability, I don't think we've ever seen it. And I think that someone like Tatiana will expose that, who is the consummate competitor. Like she's, mm-hmm. wrestled her entire life and she likes to compete. I think when you get somebody who likes to compete that well, they bring out the worst in fighters that crack under pressure. And I just think that happens in this fight. I think she's going to probably end up choking her out.
Interesting. Yeah, it's super interesting. You just wonder how much Tatiana is being diminished through all these injuries and all that stuff, stepping into a 5-round fight, lots of unknowns around her. And at least Weili has been comfortable in the spot and kind of more on her side of the world this fight. So not going to be as much jet lag and travel and all that stuff. So very curious to see how this unfolds. All right, Dean, we are into the last round here and there's only two options available. It is either the bantamweight champion, both bantamweight champions, actually, men's bantamweight, Merab Dvalishvili, or women's bantamweight, Juliana Peña. Yeah. Who are you introducing to your team as the final selection here?
Who's all right, my final selection. I hate this. I wish he was already picked. I hate this, but I'm picking Merab.
Okay.
I'm going to pick Merab, and I hate to pick him last, but
I figured he was going to be last.
Well, here's the weird part. Here's the wrench in the equation is that I think Merab wins against Umar.
Oh wow. Okay.
I think Merab beats Umar. I just think that somewhere in that division, it catches up to him. Mm. I'm not sure Umar is the guy, though. I mean, and it's not because I don't think Umar is good enough. I just think that fighting comes down to moments and these, you know, being able to deal with the pressure and this, that, and the third. And I just think that Umar, you know, Umar has a lot of weight to carry. You know, the name. There's a lot going on. And then for him to go out there and fight a guy like Murat, like if it was anybody else, I'd pick Umar, but a guy like Merab, who has built a career on finding these small little holes in fighters. He finds these small little holes and just exposes them just with his pressure and his comfortability inside the cage. I think Umar's got to watch out for that. I think Merab finds these little moments and just breaks him.
Interesting. Yeah, this is that's such a good fight. I talked to Umar a couple days ago going into this, and the guy could not be any more confident. Like, it's crazy what he's saying, that he's just gonna blow the doors off of Merab, and that he's, you know, doesn't even really see this as a challenge. I'm just trying to find the quote where he basically says, you know, like, I can guarantee victory over this guy. He has no way of beating me. And yeah, he says, in a fight, anything can happen. I can't ever tell you this is not going to happen. Never ever will this happen in my fight, but this guy will not beat me. Never ever. I can tell you this one. He will never.
Mike, that's the problem. That's the problem, is that you got to have that level of confidence. And when you have that level of confidence and everybody believing that about you, and skill for skill, he's a lot better than Merab. Like, if I were to say, okay, jab, let me see who got the better jab, who's got the better wrestling. He's probably better than Merab everywhere, for sure. And on paper, he should win because he's better everywhere. But it's those things that you can't really place value on, those things you can't really measure. And that is, you know, the level of intensity that Merab brings to kind of even you out. And those are the things that I try to pay attention to with fighters. And the more confidence Umar has when Merab keeps coming, and he's like, dang, I thought this was going to be over. Mm-hmm. And you start to break, that's when it really exposes itself. I just feel like he's got all this confidence, and then when he realizes that Merab is not going to stop, and he's like, yo, I'm better, but this guy will not stop. Mm-hmm. You start to lose confidence. You start to break. And I can see that happening in this fight.
Yeah, that would be a wild scene. And yeah, like you said, those other extenuating factors, like Umar having to fight right before Islam. He's the first one kicking off this trio of title fights. His brother defends the title in Bellator the week later, and he's the only one, right? Like, he's the one trying to get the belt. These guys already have their championships. They've already accomplished that high, and it just feels like so much freaking pressure on Umar here. But if he goes out there and performs the way he says he's going to, holy crap, that'd be insane. Okay, so what's your path here then? Because you think Merab beats Umar, and then next maybe Sean O'Malley, you think Sean beats him? Or like, is it
now Sean won't beat Sean won't
he's beat already Merab. Beat all the other guys out there. I feel like after this
I think that division is so deep and talented that there's somebody lurking that's like, yo, by the end of the year I'm getting my shot, and Merab gonna fight him, he gonna shock him there. But there's somebody lurking in that division, because to me, 135 is always, I mean, it's kind of worked itself out these last couple of years, but it's been so deep for so long, mm-hmm. that it's just, there's so much talent, and a lot of guys can beat each other on any given day, and it just comes down to who's more prepared in that moment. But I do think that there's somebody this year that's going to figure that out. It's not going to be O'Malley, though. Like, O'Malley just, he got tossed around so bad.
I know.
He got tossed around so bad in that fight. I was like, yo, did he try? Is he even trying?
Yeah, he claims he was injured, but felt like once he saw that first takedown in the first round, you're like, oh, this is the way the fight's going to go. And it's inevitable from there.
Because I picked Sean. Mm-hmm. I said, yo, Sean's going to be prepared. He's, you know, he can wrestle. His grappling is really good. Like, he's got a good guard game. And when he got taken down so easy and just dominated, I know he was going to get taken down, but just dominated the way he did. I was like, yo, this is not who I thought he was. He's not who I thought he was. Mm-hmm. And RJ Clifford, I know, you know, RJ, the great RJ Clifford, was like, this is exactly how I thought it would go. I was like, I did not think it was going to go this way. I thought Sean O'Malley was going to be a little bit more prepared for this onslaught. He was not, and I'm not sure he can get prepared for that. So I don't think it's going to be O'Malley, but I think that there's somebody else, you know, rising up that's going to come up and be like, yo, give me my shot. You know, yep. He's going to have his Mr. T Clubber Lang moment. Like, give me my shot.
Yeah, and that leaves Dean with your selection here. Just Juliana Pena remaining. I have like a vision in my head of like being in school and everyone picking the teams and her just kind of standing there as last as line and be like, well, no one actually picked you, but you're here kind of by default. And I love Juliana. Of course, like she has been one of the few interesting things at women's bantamweight over the past half decade or so. But scary times for her right now with Kayla Harrison looming. Or if, even if Amanda Nunes came back, I think a lot of people would pick her to lose that trilogy fight as well. So it just seems like Juliana Pena has the biggest uphill climb when it comes to who her next contender could be. If she beats Juliana, or if she beats Kayla Harrison, probably makes it through the year, but that's a tough one. Only other circumstance I could see her having that title is I spoke to Kayla Harrison's manager, Ali Abdelaziz, a couple weeks ago. He said that Juliana may not be available in the time frame UFC is hoping for her to defend that title. And an interim belt has been discussed, whether it's against Norma Dumont or Raquel Pennington. It seems like that could come in play as well. So maybe Juliana is out the whole year with an injury and they let her keep the title or something like that. But if she fights and she fights Kayla Harrison, I think that is grim for her, and I assume that's why she fell to the final pick in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look at that matchup and think that Juliana would be the favorite or could win that. Like, it's a tough path of victory for her to win that fight. There are ways. I mean, Kayla Harrison, honestly, I do think that there are females in the bantamweight division that can beat Kayla Harrison. With the right game plan, being prepared, having the moment, because Kayla Harrison is not Kayla Harrison at 135 is not Kayla Harrison at 155. It's a big difference in her performances. 100%. And for sure. And I do think that there are women at bantamweight that can beat her. I think Norma Dumont would probably give her problems. And people thought I was crazy when I say, hey, listen, Macy Chiasone would give her problems. Mm-hmm. Macy Chiasone is an energizer bunny. You know, you get Kayla Harrison, you put her in a fast paced fight for five rounds. I don't think she can take it. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that Juliana Pena can do that. Yeah. It's hard for me to see. I can't see it.
Yeah. It's a real tough one. We'll see how it all shakes out with the timing and stuff, but yeah, that is a very tricky fight for Juliana. She's got the uphill climb, but she falls on to my team with all the other women's champions here, Dean. I have all three on my roster here. And just to recap here as we come to a conclusion, Dean, all 12 have been picked. Your team, stacked as can be, Islam Makhachev, Ilya Topuria, Alex Pereira, Bilal Muhammad, John Jones, and Merab Dvalishvili. And I have Tom Aspinall, Alexandre Pantoja, Valentina Shevchenko, Dricus du Plessis, Zhang Wali, and Juliana Pena. If these two teams met in an alley, I'm a little bit afraid for my side of it.
I was about to say, man, did
you got all three?
You really did get the B team.
Hey, you never know, though. That wasn't the game, though. It's not a versus. We'll just see how many of these can come through the end of the year as champions. And thank you so much for joining and doing this with me, Dean. Before I let you go here, you will be in LA doing your coach analyst role, right, for UFC 311. How excited are you to kind of contribute to the first pay-per-view of the year? I think you do a great job in that role.
Well, first off, appreciate you saying that about me doing a great job in that role. But yeah, I'm headed out there on Thursday. I can't wait to get out to LA. I'm hoping, you know, that the show does happen. You know, the unfortunate circumstances going on in LA right now, I'm still hoping that the show does happen, and hopefully we can do something in LA that gets people's mind off of all this negativity and then just have some fun for once, maybe bring some light to LA for now. So looking forward to it, man. It's great fights, and Yuri Prochazka, Jamal Hill, that's going to be a great fight. So yeah, I can't wait to get this thing on.
Yeah. And just lastly on the coaches role, have you ever had, or what's the closest? Cause I think about this every time they bring you onto the broadcast, like what happens if someone gets knocked out when Dean is speaking? And I feel like it's almost happened a couple
of times. It has a couple of times. I got to shut up. I shut up like right away. They just cut my mic. When something big happens, whether somebody gets knocked out or something big happens, they just cut my mic. And I just start, and I'm like talking for like another 5 seconds before I realize, oh, I got no mic on. Yeah.
I feel like there's maybe like a hidden gem they could one day release of like the Dean Thomas calls that were cut off from the broadcast. Just bring back.
Oh, yeah. The worst part is that I'll be saying something about how good a guy is doing, and then he gets knocked out. Yeah, that's a really good one. I mean, it happened this weekend. Cesar Almeida Razak Al-Hassan, right? Yeah. I could have been like, yo, Razak Al-Hassan putting hands on my boy. And then boom, that's it. Bing, he's out.
Yep, that was incredible.
The fight game, man. The fight game is crazy.
Yeah, and we're here to talk about it all. Always, Dean, appreciate your presence in the sport. Appreciate you coming on the Bonfire for the first time and participating in this championship draft, something we will definitely look back on at the end of the year. But I will make sure to have you back here on the show at least once before then, Dean. So thank you so much for the time. I will be back on the other side of the break to wrap things up as we get ready for UFC 311 in LA. That does it for another episode of The Bonfire. Thank you so much again to Dean Thomas for participating in the first championship draft. We will be keeping track of this all throughout the year. See who has it the most correct as we circle back and do this again, most definitely, at the beginning of 2026. I had a lot of fun with that, and now the table is set heading into UFC 311. This card, as I said off the top, and as me and Dean chatted about there, is going to be a spectacular night. I don't think the UFC could have offered a much better start to the year as far as a five-fight lineup on pay-per-view. Intrigue in all five of these matchups and some great prelims there as well. So as I said earlier, we'll be heading out there for MMA Junkie. We'll have all the fight week coverage and your content needs. Media Day, Wednesday, press conference Thursday, weigh-ins Friday, and of course, the monster that is UFC 311 coming on Saturday. Make sure you follow along. Maybe some stuff on this YouTube channel. Most definitely lots of stuff over on the MMA Junkie YouTube channel and MMAJunkie.usatoday.com. Make sure to follow me on social medias as well. And please, of course, give this show a thumbs up, a like, a follow, a subscription, whatever you can do to show your support. It means a lot as you try to grow the show and keep the ball rolling here in 2025. Thank you so much to Kamikaze Abi Suban for producing the show. He is a big piece of the puzzle of what we are doing here, and we are going to keep this party rolling. So thanks so much for everyone for tuning in. Enjoy the UFC 311 coverage, and we will see you right back here next week by The Bonfire.